One of the great foods that built civilization was rice. And for most of this series, we've spent our time looking west, wheat, bread, olive oil, and the foods that developed civilization around the Mediterranean and the Fertile Crescent. But today we're going to look east. Well, from where I am, it's west, but, you know, that's the problem with living on this global planet. But contrary to the modern idea that humans were somehow designed to spend our lives chasing large animals across the landscape, civilization was largely built upon carbohydrates. In that Fertile Crescent area, it became wheat, and across much of Asia, rice, because you can't build a city while chasing a woolly mammoth. A mammoth is dinner. A granary is civilization. Thousands of years ago, along the wetlands and floodplains of the Yangtze River Valley, people began gathering seeds of a wild grass. Wild rice had one annoying characteristic. When it became ripe, the seeds fell off the plant. And that was good for the rice, but it was really difficult for the person carrying the basket. Some of those plants held onto their grains a little bit longer. They were easier to gather. So people gathered them, replanted them, and slowly selected the rice that waited for humans to harvest it. None of them knew about genetics. They were just voting with their baskets. And over generations, humans domesticated rice. And then rice helped humans domesticate. Because once you can grow a dependable crop, harvest it, dry it, store it, you tend to stay in one place. And once you stay, villages become towns, town needs water, storage, rules, records. Surplus foods means that some people no longer have to farm every hour of the day, so you get builders, merchants, soldiers, scribes, and eventually governments. And because floods, droughts, and disease still happen, you probably get a few gods, too. Of course, that was before AI, so humans had to make up their own explanations. But that's what a stable crop does. It doesn't just feed people. It gives the people enough stability to actually stay in one place to build a civilization. Now, China, of course, was never simply one enormous bowl of rice. Northern China depended heavily on millet and later wheat. But rice was especially important in the wetter portions of Southeast Asia. And these were some remarkable civilizations. They developed writing, sophisticated governments, metallurgy, gunpowder, and extraordinary maritime technology. And behind much of that civilization was rice. Which makes it slightly amusing today when someone tells you that rice is bad for you because it contains carbohydrates. Rice isn't evil. Rice is food. And today, on 4Q, we are going to make sense of the madness that surrounds rice. I am your chief medical explanationist, Dr. Terry Simpson, and this is Fork U, Fork University, where we make sense of the madness, bust a few myths, and teach you a little bit about food and medicine. Now, as you probably should know and confess, that I once was a low-carb believer. I was deep into my low-carb phase and thought that many of our dietary problems could be explained by the evil whites. You know, white sugar, white flour, white rice. It was wonderfully simple and wrong. Because eventually you have to look outward at what the world shows you. And when you see Tibetan monks eating bowls of rice remaining remarkably lean, or travel throughout Asia and watch people eat rice every day, often several times a day, without looking remotely like having a metabolic disorder, well, you have to explain what you observe. And you don't get to change the observation because you like the model. Rice has fed a substantial part of humanity for thousands of years, and rice has been used even medicinally. Rice has been used to make wine. Before we had effective drugs for severe hypertension, Walter Kempner at Duke University treated patients with malignant hypertension, the kind that killed President Franklin Roosevelt, using an extraordinarily restrictive diet based on rice and fruit, and it worked. Now, I'm not recommending the Kempner diet. I often clearly recommend a Mediterranean-style diet, but it was extremely restrictive, and today we have much better ways of treating hypertension. We did an entire episode about 4Q on it, but the irony is worth remembering. One of the foods blamed for causing metabolic diseases was once the basis for one of the most successful dietary treatments for a disease that killed our president. Food is usually more complicated than simple theories. So should you fear rice? No. Eat rice is fine. But a very large part of the world does. And if your pancreas works normally, your body knows what to do with the starch. Now, if you have diabetes, then rice becomes a more individualized discussion. How much do you eat? What do you eat it with? How it fits into your overall diet? And that's a conversation to have with your board-certified physician or registered dietitian. I don't organize my diet around a glycemic index. I don't care about the short-term glucose responses because I don't have diabetes or insulin resistance. And most people don't need to sit down with a laboratory portion of naked rice. And I never understood why perfectly healthy people needed continuous glucose monitors only unless they wanted to develop some form of orthorexia and food eating disorder. If you have diabetes, glucose monitoring is enormously useful. If you don't, there's little reason to spend your afternoon staring at a graph because you had a bowl of rice. But that's another episode. Today, we're talking about rice and civilization. Now, brown rice retains the bran and the germ, so it has more fiber and micronutrients. White rice does not. And generally, we favor whole grains, but rice, white rice is still food, and some of the greatest dishes depend upon it. Sushi. Paella, probably my favorite. What about arsenic? Sure, rice can contain arsenic. That part is true. It tends to absorb arsenic because of the way rice is grown, but it depends on where it's grown. Rice that comes from the South Central United States has higher inorganic arsenic, while basmati rice from India and Pakistan and California-grown rice has lower forms of arsenic. Brown rice tends to contain more than white rice. So if you eat rice occasionally, I wouldn't lose sleep over it. If you eat rice every day, especially several times a day, then it's reasonable to know where your rice comes from and how to vary your grains. That's not fear, that's just perspective. Rice also gave medicine with some of the great lessons about vitamins. In 19th century Japan, polished white rice became fashionable because it looked refined. It stored well. It was associated with royal status. But the polishing removed the outer layers of grain, and hidden in those layers was something nobody knew existed. Thiamine, vitamin B1. And sailors who lived predominantly on polished rice while they were at sea developed a condition called beriberi, which led to weakness, nerve damage, heart failure, and death. A Japanese physician named Kanaharu Takaki noticed that enlisted sailors were getting beriberi while officers who ate a more varied diet were not. So he changed the sailors' diet. Takaki arranged for two ships leaving, one on the same journey, following the same pattern, and those that had a more varied diet had less beriberi. He didn't know about vitamin B1, nobody did. But later scientists described thiamine. Now, thiamine has its own episode in something called the first vitamin that was early on in our 4Q episodes, and I'd encourage you to listen to it because I think it's a fascinating story. Then we have golden rice. It turns out that polished white rice also leads to vitamin A deficiency, which is the most preventable cause of childhood blindness in parts of the world where diets are limited to rice only. Beta-carotene is something that our bodies can convert into vitamin A, so scientists engineered rice to produce beta-carotene, and the grain turned yellow-orange, hence it is called golden rice. Now that's a genetically modified organism, and for some people, this gives them tremendous pause. And, in fact, while golden rice was initially supported by the Philippines, the Supreme Court of the Philippines put it on hold. Meanwhile, every year, 250,000 to 500,000 children become blind because they are eating rice that contains no vitamin A, and golden rice would fix the problem. So, humans have been genetically changing rice for thousands of years. We selected plants whose grains stayed attached to the stalk. We selected grain size, yield, taste, and even vitamin contact. But there is a really important question. Do you need a $400 rice cooker? Now, apparently, this is a serious question. When I saw a rice cooker made by Zojirushi, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it, beautiful rice cooking that has things called induction heating, fuzzy logic, multiple settings, and enough computing power to make you wonder whether rice is being cooked or applying for college. Some cost up to $900. Now, I am the exact sort of person who would want one because I like kitchen toys. But I'm slightly practical in the kitchen, and I own a rice cooker. It was made in China, actually bought in China and brought back to the United States. It costs less than $30. I put rice into it. I add water until it comes to one knuckle above the rice, push one button, and the rice comes out perfectly every time. A shout out here to my friend Sybil Valenzuela, Simon Majumdar's wife, and a serious rice lover because the knuckle method has been successfully cooking rice for a very long time without any fuzzy logic. Civilization works. There's also one thing the expensive rice cooker cannot give me. Sokerat. Now that's the crisp, caramelized layer of rice at the bottom of a good paella. And that's my favorite part. And you don't get that by pushing a button and walking away. You need a pan, you need heat, you need to pay attention, And I even told my son that someday when he finds the love of his life, don't call them honey or sweetheart, call them my sokara, because honey is sweet, but sokara is the best part. Anyway, don't fear rice. Eat it. Put it under fish. Put it next to beans. Roll it some sushi. Make biryani. Make paella. Humans have been eating rice for thousands of years, and a very large portion of the world still does. This little grass helped us control rivers, build villages, feed cities, discover vitamins, and create some of the world's finest cuisines. A mammoth is dinner. Rice built civilization. This podcast was researched and produced by me, Dr. Terry Simpson, and while I am a board-certified physician, I am not your physician. And this podcast is for information and education, so for full medical and nutrition advice, talk with your own board-certified physician and registered dietitian. Please don't talk to a chiropractor or functional medicine doctor, who are nothing more than witch doctors, in my opinion. And our friend Taki should have told us that Eastern medicine just didn't cure things. All things audio are done by my friends at Simpler Media and the polyglot himself, Mr. Evo Terra. For further information, please see my Substack at drsimpson.com. I'm Dr. Terry Simpson, your chief medical explanationist, and this has been Fork U, Fork University, where we make sense of the madness, bust if you miss, and hopefully taught you a little bit about food and medicine. Have a good week, everybody. And don't forget, enjoy your rice. Hey, Evo, so what's your favorite form of rice? And do you have an expensive rice cooker? I love paella and probably sushi. Back and forth on either one. Have a good week, buddy.
Yeah, you'll recall, Doc, that Sheila and I spent 3 years living in Southeast Asia. So the very first thing I did when I got back to Arizona in 2018 was buy a rice cooker. We have rice all the time. I mix rice with beans. I make rice for sushi. I make rice for everything. Haven't done it for paella yet because I just don't have the skill. Maybe that's something you can teach me next time we see each other. Cheers.